Even Kaylee said it smells better than new. How was your day?
Rex, did you go to the studio today?
Rolling my eyes at his evasiveness, I texted, Abby, how, Abby, was, Abby, your, Abby, day, Abby, question mark.
Rex. Fine.
What a stinker. Abby. What did you do?
Rex. Work.
Abby. That's it? Just work?
Rex. And text you?
Abby. Oh. Then why wasn't your day awesome?
Rex. My deepest apologies. Upon reflection, you're right. It was awesome.
Abby. It's important to reflect. The three dots appeared, then disappeared. I thought he wasn't going to respond, but then, just as I'd finished rinsing off my plate and leaving it by the sink to dry, another message came through.
Rex. Good night, Abby.
I know it'll sound silly, but for some reason, his words felt sad to me. I considered responding with a benign, good night, Rex, or not responding at all, but an odd urge to cheer him up had me typing, Abby. Sweet dreams, babe.
Rex.
Smiley face. The smiley emoji made me smile. As I readied for bed, brushing my teeth and washing my face, I wasn't sure which had helped alleviate the day's stress more, the complex magic of Nutella or Rex's simple smiley emoji. Waking ridiculously early to shower and change for my trip to Chicago, I wasn't surprised to find a message from Rex already on my phone. Rex.
My agent is sending a car for you today to pick you up and take you to your hotel while I'm at practice. Then you have appointments for fittings.
Rex had mentioned earlier in the week that I could pack light as the event outfits for the charity thing tonight and for our wedding at the stadium tomorrow would be provided upon arrival. Underwear, socks, toiletries, PJs, and flying clothes were the extent of the items I stuffed in my backpack. I'd packed and repacked my bag multiple times. This was my first time taking an airplane in my entire life, and not because I was afraid to fly. I had no idea if I was afraid to fly. I'd never been given the option until now. Abby, will I meet your agent?
Rex, not this trip. Are you bringing me any perfect giant mugs?
Abby, I don't have any glazed and fired that match your giant physique.
Rex, bring me one anyway.
Rex,
a wedding gift.
Abby, what are you getting me as a wedding gift?
Rex, literally anything you want. Ask and it's yours.
Oh, that was a dangerous thing for him to send so early in the morning. Especially after I'd woken up this morning from a sexy dream about the two of us taking a dip in a hot tub. Obviously, requesting sexual favors was out of the question. I decided to ask for something similarly unlikely. Abby. World peace.
Rex. Except for that.
Abby. For Democrats and Republicans to get along and see themselves as citizens of the same country.
Rex. Or that.
Abby. Affordable, reliable internet.
Rex. Not that either.
Abby. Fine. What will you give me?
Rex. You have to ask and be specific.
Rex.
I will only do what you ask me to.
That read like a riddle. Clearly my mind was still addled from my lusty dreams. Abby. A high five?
Rex. Aim higher.
Abby. A tall high five? He didn't respond right away. In fact, He didn't respond for several minutes, so I got up and took my shower, made coffee, got dressed, and he still hadn't responded. But just as I selected the Uber app to order a ride, a text came through. Rex.
See you soon.
Chapter 13. From my experience, honey, if he seems too good to be true, he probably is. Candace Bushnell, Sex and the City.
Every person can be explained by a Frank Sinatra song.
I straightened from the tall column where I'd been leaning and glanced over my shoulder, immediately smiling as my eyes connected with the debonair, piratey features of my old high school pal. As I live and breathe, Cyrus Malcolm. It had been weeks since I'd seen him last, and his chin was still covered in stubble, not a beard, and that made me wonder if he'd been purposefully keeping his facial hair at this stage of growth to give him a villainesque aura. His smile stretched and he laughed.
Gorgeous Gail McNerney, you are breathtaking.
He stepped close to me and bumped our shoulders together.
Why are you over here all by yourself?
My smile wavered and I shrugged. Oh, you know, lurking. It was the truth. I was lurking, mostly because I didn't know what else to do. I felt him inspect me before he asked,
How was your flight? You got in today, yes?
I did. I wanted to say more. Tell him how Rex's agent had flown me first class, and it had been a bit overwhelming. I'd felt super uncomfortable in my big seat, thinking about all the people behind us who seemed to be squeezed together in coach. It didn't feel fair, and the unfairness of it plagued me during the entire flight. But I didn't say any of this because I didn't know what Rex would want me to say.
Have you traveled much?
Cyrus's question was softly spoken, coaxing. Perhaps he sensed my reticence to share. Not much, I hedged. How about you? Directing the conversation back to the other person usually saved me from talking about myself. Cyrus's green eyes seemed to glitter as they narrowed.
I bet you haven't traveled at all. Today was the first time you've ever been on a plane, right?
My shoulders slumped, and I felt every bit the fraud that I was. How did you know?
I know more about you than anyone else here, and your circumstances.
Again, his voice was soft, and his eyes turned kind. Cyrus knew about my disastrous marriage to Declan, the bankruptcy, the debts. Too embarrassed to ask Walker for help since I'd quit the boozy rancher when Declan and I had eloped, Cyrus had been the only person I could think to call when I'd been arrested.
So, tell me, how was it? How was your first plane ride?
His tone was light and friendly, and he seemed genuinely interested. Well, navigating the airport was harrowing. So many people, none of whom smiled.
But you did it.
My old friend gave me an encouraging and deferential head nod.
Soon you'll be a jet setter.
I chuckled. I don't know about that.
Give yourself some credit. It's no small thing flying for the first time on your own. And now here you are.
Here I am. He had a point. I'd flown on my own for the first time, dealt with all the unknowns, and I'd survived. I should feel proud of myself for that, at least. That said, I had been enormously relieved when I'd spotted the car Rex's agent had sent to pick me up and take me to my hotel downtown. I'd stayed in hotels before, but nothing as opulent as the room Rex's agent had booked. Upon arrival, I'd spent a few moments wandering around the room, afraid to touch anything. Then, when I realized the time, I set about following the instructions his agent had emailed me the day before. Leaving my overnight bag behind, I'd walked to a fancy-looking shop on the Magnificent Mile and had three dress fittings. A long, formal red silk dress for tonight, a beautiful white dress for our wedding tomorrow at the stadium, and a green tea dress with a flared skirt that ended just above my knee for the wedding we'd be attending together in December. The last one also had a tiny matching hat, and I was grateful for the ladies at the shop who'd taught me how to affix it to my head. I had my doubts about actually wearing the hat, however. It had feathers and a wee little veil and made me feel ridiculous.
And this dress?
Cyrus's eyes lowered as he made a chef's kiss movement with his fingers.
You look like art.
Thank you, it has pockets. It didn't really have pockets. I ignored the pinpricks on the back of my neck, pleased Cyrus had noticed the dress, because I loved it and thought I looked amazing in it. But the evening thus far had not been a particularly pleasant one. In retrospect, neither had the afternoon after my flight. The tailor and the saleswoman present for the fitting of the red dress had realized at the same time I had that I couldn't wear my current under things tonight. Don't get me wrong, the dress was absolutely stunning. I'd never felt so beautiful and sexy, but the material was extremely unforgiving. It didn't play nice with my trusty cotton underwear and bra. I'd taken off both, and then the lines looked perfect, except my boobs were a little too boobtacular. The tailor and lead saleswoman promised to figure out a solution before I returned. I could do nothing but place my trust in their hands. After finishing the fittings, I'd walked to a spa, also on Magnificent Mile, where Rex's agent had arranged for several beauty treatments. Pedicure, manicure, facial, waxing of multiple surfaces, all painful, makeup, hair blowout, yada yada yada. They'd also served me lunch, which admittedly had been nice. In the middle of a spa treatment, while the technician waxed the hairs at the apex of my thigh, to the left of my cooch, I couldn't help but laugh at myself. I was every cliche from every movie where the uneducated, backwoodsy bumpkin goes to the big city and has herself a makeover montage. But, I supposed, if I were a fancy lady, I'd be doing this kind of thing on the regular, and therefore no makeover montage would have been necessary. I would be living my life in a state of perpetual makeoverness. The thought left me feeling oddly numb and adrift, and by the time I had finished at the spa, I barely had a half hour to jog back to the dress place, agree to wear the new bra, underwear, and stockings they'd procured in my absence, pull on the newly tailored red dress, red shoes, and matching wool coat, and be outside in enough time for the limo to pick me up on its way to grab Rex from work. And then, the cherry on top of a poo pile, when Rex had slid into the limo, he'd given me an aloof, cursory once over, and nodded politely. Before I could say a single word, his phone rang and he took the call, a call that had lasted the entire drive to the charity dinner thing. Now I lurked next to a column on the edge of the room while watching Rex be pulled this way and that by some man who'd claimed him as soon as we'd walked into the gala and who couldn't wait to introduce Rex to some very important people. "And now you're lurking," Cyrus tisked, cutting into my reflections. His dark eyebrows arched over his pretty green eyes.
"That's a damn shame. If you were my fake fiancé, I'd show you off like diamonds."
My stomach dropped. Squinting at my former friend, I whispered, "Fake fiancé?" He nodded once.
"Rex told me."
"Told you what?"
"Told me he's paying you to marry him. And he told me what happened the night of Jason's bachelor party back in Austin."
I lifted my chin, absorbing this information. Given the events of the day, I didn't have much energy to figure out how I felt about Rex telling Cyrus about our agreement. Then again, I told Kaylee. Yeah, but she's your lawyer. Cyrus is no lawyer, though he might play one on TV someday.
"You still got a thing for Rex?"
Cyrus bumped my shoulder again, his tone gentle but interested.
Is that why you're doing this?
I like him, I hedged, my voice too high. I cleared my throat. Rex is a good guy. He's always been a good guy.
So that's why you agreed to be his fake wife? Because he's a good guy?
I shrugged. And the money? The lie almost caught in my throat. They were obviously still good friends, and Cyrus would want to look out for Rex. That made complete sense to me. But Cyrus had witnessed firsthand the depth and breadth of my Rex obsession during our freshman year of high school. It was a moot point now, but I didn't want Cyrus thinking I'd agreed to help while secretly harboring some ulterior motive or scheme about hooking up with Rex. That boat had sailed. In fact, given Rex's non-reaction to me in the limo, I suspected that boat had never been built.
Oh, right. The money. All that money.
Cyrus's words held a hint of mockery. I ignored it, keeping my gaze forward and on Rex. The man who'd absconded with him about a half hour earlier still hovered nearby, but now Rex was standing amid a circle of women and talking to another man who I thought looked familiar but couldn't quite place. As though reading my mind, Cyrus said,
Alaric Jordan.
A memory clicked into place. He went to high school with us, I muttered. He'd been the prom king my graduating year, and if memory served, he had been good friends with both Rex and Cyrus.
Yep, now he's a venture capitalist. Splits his time between Houston and Chicago.
Something about the way Cyrus said venture capitalist had me glancing at him. A sardonic smile twisted his lips, and his eyes sparkled with mischief.
Aren't you going to ask me about my Frank Sinatra song theory?
I tried to recall what he'd said upon initially coming over to me, but I couldn't. What was it again?
Every person can be explained by a Frank Sinatra song.
Ah, yes. I nodded, leaning against the column again. Well, that is a theory.
You've always done that.
Done what? Cyrus stepped in front of me, blocking my view of Rex, Alaric, and the others.
When someone says something you think is idiotic, you respond with a factual statement without admitting or denying value. That's a theory, or that's an idea. It sounds like a compliment at first, but really, you're saying nothing at all, giving nothing of your thoughts away.
I wore a patient smile. That's another theory. He looked like he wanted to laugh, but instead squinted at me.
Don't you want to know what Frank Sinatra song you are?
I'd prefer to know which of Frank's songs you believe yourself to be epitomized by.
That's easy.
He grinned happily, which made him look more like his younger self than the suave movie star he'd become.
That's life.
Ha ha. I could see that about him. Good one.
And you are obviously the lady's a tramp.
My expression flattened. Obviously. Still wearing his boyish grin, he pushed his hands into his suit pants pockets and tilted his head to the side, scrutinizing me.
The fact that you have no follow-up questions illustrates my point perfectly, as it's about a woman who doesn't give a shit what other people think and does whatever she wants.
That's why I said obviously.
And Alaric is...
My way? I hadn't seen Alaric since graduation, nor had we ever really spoken. But if our former prom king and valedictorian was still anything like the teenage version of himself, the song fit perfectly.
Yes, exactly.
Cyrus's gaze moved over me approvingly, and he laughed. Apparently my willingness to play his game put him in a good mood. Turning around such that he rested his back against the column, he lifted his chin toward the crowd around Rex.
Let's do a few others, shall we?
Nah, I feel like it could turn mean and petty quickly.
Okay, fair point.
He glanced over his shoulder at me.
Then let's only do it to people we like.
Fine. Who else do we like?
Rex.
I stiffened and tried not to sound robotic as I said, Oh, yes. Rex.
What do you think?
Cyrus let the back of his head hit the column. My stomach twisted as my eyes moved over Rex's beautiful body in his beautiful, elegant suit. With all the texting and jokes and back and forth, I'd thought, or I guess I'd hoped. I didn't know what I'd thought or hoped, but today, during the entire afternoon spa debacle, as I'd been poked and prodded and pinched and pinned, waxed and cinched and painted, stupidly, I'd thought all the disorder and discomfort would be all worth it when I saw Rex. Maybe I hadn't explicitly acknowledged the thought at the time, but now, standing here all dressed up in this gorgeous red dress, with my hair in long, thick, shiny waves, and my expertly drawn makeup, and my new lacy lingerie, I acknowledged the truth. I had never looked as good in my life as I did tonight. The afternoon had been fun. All the getting ready and becoming beautiful despite the disruption, until Rex slid into the back seat of that limo and pretended I didn't exist.
He's a tough one, don't you think?
Cyrus asked, rubbing his pirate stubble. Rex was a tough one. I used to think he was tough like crusty bread, hard on the exterior with a soft, warm, irresistible center. But I was starting to wonder whether I'd had it wrong. Maybe Rex was tough like boiled, unseasoned flank steak. Just tough.
I would have said Rex's song was Saturday Night is the Loneliest Night of the Week, until just recently.
Cyrus volunteered as though I'd asked. I've never heard that one.
It's good, but depressing. About a dude who misses his girlfriend on Saturday nights, since that's the night they always went out, but they don't go out anymore because presumably they broke up at some point. Where she is every woman he's ever dated.
I didn't know what to think about that.
But that's not him anymore. Not since, well, you.
I felt his eyes slide to the side and inspect my profile. I kept my attention forward as I said, Tramps have that effect on people. Cyrus laughed, turning to face me again, his eyes sparkling down at me like twin gems.
You were adorable, Abby.
His voice was silk and sandpaper. I shifted back a step as our gazes connected, surprised to discover Cyrus now had game, plenty of game. When I saw him last, he'd been thoroughly without any game, no flirt power, just an abundance of earnestness and an unhealthy habit of wearing his heart on his sleeve. But now, and maybe without even really trying, sexuality and charisma rolled off him in waves. So, I crossed my arms, flailing for a subject change under the intensity of Cyrus's magnetic stare, but then dropped my arms to my sides again when I realized how much crossing them drew attention to the generous amount of boobage I had on display.
So?
Once more, Cyrus placed himself in front of me, his hand now on the column at his left, my right. I felt a little boxed in. A person's Frank Sinatra song can change? I finally managed to croak out. What? He blinked, as though confused. It's not constant? He nodded, his understanding, pushing away from the column and coming to stand at my other side.
Of course it can change. People change, and so does their song.
I followed Cyrus's line of sight to the group of people, mostly women, who still stood around Rex and Alaric.
You know,
he bumped my shoulder like he'd done earlier.
He's dated all of them.
Huh. How about that? I was all turned around, not knowing what to feel or whether I had the right to feel anything. What a strange, disconcerting hour it had been.
And now they're all married.
I peered sideways at Cyrus. Wait, what? Is that true?
Oh, yes. You know what that means.
What does it mean? He leaned in close to whisper.
Your future husband is probably in this room.
I stared at him for a long moment, and then I chuckled, smacking his shoulder with the back of my hand. Shut up!
No.
He also laughed, caught my wrist, and held my hand.
It's true. All of Rex's ex-dates marry one of his friends.
I tugged my hand away. Cyrus, let me go. That's stupid.
It's true.
But
ask anyone. Hell.
He gestured to the women surrounding Rex.
Ask any of them. Every single one of them met their future husband when they were dating Rex, or shortly after dating him.
I knew this was at least partially true. That Clarence O'Day jerk never stopped pointing out how many of Rex's exes married his friends. But still, it couldn't be all of them.
Any woman he's ever been on a date with, the very next person she dates ends up becoming her spouse.
I made a face. Not every single one.
Every single one.
And he just has to go on a date with them? Like just one date?
Yes.
Since when?
Since his very first girlfriend. You remember Emma Cortez?
I hesitated before admitting. Yes, I believe they broke up sophomore year because her parents wanted her to focus on school, right?
Yeah. Well, she married the next guy she dated, met at Princeton. He's a doctor, she's a lawyer, just like that. And you know his second girlfriend, what's her name? They only dated for like a month.
Cyrus snapped his fingers, his gaze losing focus over my head. Jennifer Killigan. I couldn't remember my cousin's daughter's name, but knew the names of all Rex's girlfriends in high school. Yes, I'd been that person.
Yes, her. She and Mark Towers married, and Mark was the very next guy she dated after Rex.
This is a distressing topic.
And yet, it's also true.
Cyrus pointed to one of the women circled around Rex.
That's Yana. Rex took her to one work thing, one date, and now her wife is Rex's agent. That one? That's Carrie. They dated for 2 weeks. Her husband is now Kendrick over there, a friend of Rex's from college. They played ball together. And see her?
Please stop. I turned and walked aimlessly. Away. My heart did weird things, and my brain felt too full. Cyrus's laughter followed me, and soon he was at my shoulder again.
Wait, Abby, come on.
He wrapped his hand around my elbow and pulled me through the crowd, leading me onto a vacant, freezing balcony. Snow had accumulated on the railing, a full inch, and I wrapped my arms around myself. Why are we out here? It's cold.
Of course it's cold as Chicago in November.
He released my arm and quickly shrugged off his jacket.
Here, put this on.
I accepted it automatically, pulling it over my shoulders. How will you stay warm?
Are you kidding? I'm full of hot air.
He stepped back, smirking in a way that looked self-deprecating, but he did not look cold.
Look, we can go back inside in a sec. Are you okay?
Yes, of course. No, I'm not. I mean, it's... I thought... I don't know. I guess I did know that a few of his ex-girlfriends and dates had ended up with a few of his friends and acquaintances, but I didn't realize it was every single one of them. One of Cyrus's eyebrows ticked up as he watched me, but he offered no comment. That's crazy, right? I feel bad for him, that the press has turned his nickname into the butt of a joke about his personal life. I wasn't doing a good job of explaining myself, so I slowed down, breathing out snarled emotion and breathing in calm. It's sad and frustrating. He is such a decent person, a good human, and I don't understand why it never works out for him.
Maybe it hasn't worked out because he hasn't dated the right person,
he offered with a shrug. Yeah, that could definitely be it. My eyes lost focus as I recalled once more the complete and utter lack of interest in Rex's gaze when he saw me for the first time tonight, my stomach and heart giving just an echo of the dull, aching pulse I'd felt earlier. Had I been holding out hope that I was that right person? Not consciously. But after tonight, I wouldn't entertain the hope subconsciously either. And now that I'd well and truly given up, maybe I could be Rex's Rex. Maybe I could be the girl he dated before he met his wife.
Abby?
I blinked Cyrus back into focus, filled with newfound purpose. Do you have someone in mind? He stared at me like he'd missed part of the conversation.
Someone in mind?
Ah, yes. He had missed part of the conversation since I'd been lost in thought and debating with myself. For Rex, do you have someone you think might make him happy? Cyrus continued staring at me. Because I would like to help, truly. I crossed the balcony and stood directly in front of him. It's not too late for me to call off the wedding. If there's someone you think he's interested in, someone who will treat him well, and he's been hesitant to date because of how things normally turn out for him, just tell me what I can do and I'll do it. As his gaze moved between mine, the side of his mouth curved slowly upward until he breathed a little puff of a laugh. He laughed again.
Abby.
Yes? His eyes narrowed, though he still grinned.
I don't know, he said haltingly. I think I've meddled enough as it is. Maybe we should just let things run their course now.
Then, under his breath, he added,
How does Rex make this look so easy?
My stomach sunk at his caginess. But there is someone? Maybe Alaric knows. I doubted Alaric would remember me from high school, but I could still ask.
Listen to me, you beautiful, sweet, lovely woman. There is no one else.
Cyrus gently cupped my hands and pressed them together between his palms.
Stop worrying about Rex. He's a big boy. He can take care of himself.
But I...
Abby...
Both Cyrus and I turned our heads toward the deep voice, finding Rex standing just outside the threshold of the door. Though he'd said my name, his eyes were on his friend, and he looked... Well, he looked pissed.
Oh, hey there, Rex.
Unhurriedly, Cyrus released my hands and stepped away from me, wearing an unconcerned smile. The larger man continued glaring at Cyrus, but held his hand out to me.
We should go in for dinner.
His voice was monotone, but the slight edge of harnessed anger made my back straighten and my neck itch. Why was he angry? He'd been the one to leave me the moment we'd arrived to go meet very important people, and now he was angry because I was talking to Cyrus? Drawing myself up, I opened my mouth to point this out, but then his gaze cut to mine, and the words died on my tongue. He looked angry, yes, but there was something else there, too. Sadness? Frustration? Maybe something had happened inside the gala while Cyrus and I had been out here discussing how to best help Rex find a lady worthy of him. Deflated, I pulled off Cyrus's jacket and handed it over to him. Thanks.
Anytime,
he said, his eyes twinkling with more mysterious mischief. As he glanced between me and Rex, he looked like he might laugh. Just as I made it to the door, Cyrus added,
Seriously, anytime, Abby.
And then he did laugh. Rex made some sort of sound in the back of his throat, a cross between a grunt and a loud sigh, and his hand closed around my fingers in a tight squeeze the moment I placed them in his palm. Holding the door open, he guided me inside first, then slid his arm around my waist, pressing me more snugly against his side than I recalled him doing before, his body tense. I peered up at him, watched his Adam's apple bob with a swallow, his "fuck off, not now" expression firmly in place.
"Are you cold?"
he asked quietly, not looking at me, his voice a grumbly rasp. I shivered. "A little." He brought us to a stop and turned me so that we faced each other, his hand now splayed on the center of my back, hot through the thin layer of silk. The harshness behind his eyes seemed to dwindle as they hooked into mine.
"Do you have a wrap or something?"
I shook my head. His eyebrows pulled together, and I had only a split second to register the concern in his gaze before he pulled me forward and wrapped his arms around me, bringing the front of my body fully against his. My lips parted in surprise as a burst of warm loveliness originating in the lower half of my stomach swirled and pressed outward, meeting and mingling with his heat everywhere he touched me. I was being hugged by Rex, and it was an experience like no other. My friend Josephine said my hugs were the best because there was just so much of me, so much height, and my arms were long. She said it was like being wrapped in a chenille blanket with the added bonus of boobs and perfume. For the first time, I understood what she meant. There was just so much of Rex. He was so darn big and strong and warm and, yes, it was like being wrapped in a chenille blanket. But instead of boobs, this one had massive biceps and smelled like the warmth of sunshine on a cold day, like heat and cologne, grass and snow, an indescribable dichotomy of everything cozy and brisk. Dear Lord, I can properly die now. Life will never get better than this. After a prolonged moment that felt infinitely too short, Rex's hands lifted to my shoulders, slid down my arms, and he pulled away.
"Better?"
he asked, ensnaring my gaze again, his voice low and soft and lovely. "Much," I said, feeling warmer everywhere. Chapter 14. I'd rather die on an adventure than live standing still. V.E. Schwab, A Darker Shade of Magic. "Take the money," I groaned, splashing an island of bubbles away from my stomach. "I can't take the money." The hot bath in the giant hotel tub had provided some comfort, as had the bottle of wine I'd indulgently ordered from room service. But when my brain refused to settle and my heart persisted in its sad ache, I'd called my lawyer. Kaylee was the only one I could talk to about this. She was my friend, and I trusted her judgment. I'd told her all about the day and evening with Rex, what Cyrus had said at the gala, and how Rex had, apart from the brief hug, basically ignored me all night. Then, when the gala had ended, he'd asked the driver to drop me off at the hotel and had opted to take a different car home. "No, Abby, take the money. For your own good and peace of mind, take it. I know you're thinking about my financial future, but taking the money is out of the question." Lifting my hand from the water, I inspected my wrinkled fingertips. I missed baths. My apartment only had a shower. "I'm not talking as your lawyer right now. I'm talking as your friend. Yes, taking the money which you agreed to take and which you have earned and will earn is best for your financial future, but I also think you need to take it because not accepting the money means you're blurring lines that shouldn't be blurred. What do you mean? If you take the money, you'll think of Rex as a boss, not as a friend with the potential for more, and you'll see him within those boss-like boundaries. Would you care whether or not Walker commented on how pretty you looked in your dress tonight? I wrinkled my nose. I see your point. If Walker ever commented on how pretty I looked, it would weird me out. But Walker isn't comparable to Rex. I see Walker as an older brother, even a father figure. Fair enough. You've known him forever, and so sure, the boss lines have blurred there too. But let me ask you this. What do you see Rex as? Lifting my eyes to the ceiling, I ignored the dull ache in my chest and the miserable weight in my stomach. I had a big crush on him in high school. I'm sure you did, along with everyone else. The dude is seriously hot. I guess. I heaved a sad sigh. I'm so stupid. You are not stupid. You would think I'd learned my lesson, but obviously some frivolous, naive part of me must be hoping for that fairy tale to come true. That he asked me to do this because he likes me. But the truth is, he thinks of you as an employee, and he's been very upfront about what he wants and expects. He spelled it out in a prenup, an excessively fair and generous prenup. That's why you should take the money. He thinks you're taking the money. He thinks you're being fairly compensated for your time and effort. He probably didn't comment on how lovely you looked tonight because he didn't want to make you uncomfortable, seeing as how you work for him. You're right. I know. I laughed lightly, feeling both better and worse. Okay, I get it now. So, you'll take the money? No. I mean, yes. I'll accept it, but I think I'll donate it. Kaylee released the world's most obnoxious sigh. Why are you this way? Why can't you do nice things for yourself? If I take the money for myself, it'll make me unhappy. I learned that when I accepted the first check. Other than paying you back, I haven't spent any of it. Having thousands of dollars in my checking account gives me nightmares. Don't ask me to explain it. I won't. I love you, but you make no sense. But you're right. I have to accept the money because that's what Rex and I agreed. I'm being an nincompoop. I nodded at my own assertion, feeling the rightness of it in my bones. He thinks of me as an employee, not a friend, not anything else. What if he did? What if he wanted more? He would never think of me like that. But what if he did? I considered the question and laughed at myself as the answer became confusingly crystal clear. I was a mess of contradictions. I wanted Rex to notice me, but I didn't want to date him. I wanted his praise and attention and flirting, but no scary commitment or expression of feelings. What's so funny? Kaylee asked. No, not with Rex. He... What? We would never be equal. I would always be at a disadvantage. Because he's wealthy? No, it's not that, I said, my bones feeling heavier as I relayed the sad truth. Because I don't trust myself around him. I like him so much. And I know it's not just the idea of him, it's him. I've gotten to know him. I feel like he could ask me to do anything, ask me for anything, and I'd say yes. Yikes. I know. So, no Rex. But I thought you didn't want to date anyone. I didn't. I hedged. But you do now? A note of hope entered her voice. You're ready to date again? I didn't need to think about the question. I knew the answer immediately. though I was loath to admit anything out loud. The idea of dating someone, putting myself out there, trusting, was still terrifying. And as soon as I confessed the truth, I knew Kaylee would start setting me up with her surfeit of single male friends. And yet, something had changed recently. I'd changed. Pretending and texting with Rex had flipped a switch. A secret, dormant longing had been reignited. I wanted someone to flirt with, to have inside jokes with, someone to share my day and my burdens, someone not Rex. Haltingly, I said, "I want to take things slow." She squealed. "And it'll have to wait until I'm finished helping Rex." I held up my pruned index finger from the water. "I'm not going to cheat on this fake marriage. Doing so would undo all our hard work, and I feel like dating someone on the side would be super shitty to Rex." He'd never explicitly said one way or the other, but I doubted Rex wanted me dating someone while he and I were fake married, and he said I could end the arrangement whenever I wanted. What if he dates someone? I forced my throat to work around rocks and shards of glass and shades of envy green at the thought, because it wasn't any of my business. If Rex wanted to date someone, good. I was a placeholder. That's it. We'd divorce, maybe they'd get married, and that would be that. Fine. Don't date until you and Rex are done with the arrangement. But this makes me so happy! I laughed. Why are you so obsessed with me dating? It's more like I'm obsessed with you finally getting over that skid mark ex of yours and leaving the memory of him in the dust where he belongs. I hate that he had so much power over you, even years later. You are the best, and I want to see you happy. I'm already happy. Okay, happier. I could picture her rolling her eyes, but I knew she was still smiling. I want to see you blissfully, ecstatically, rapturously happy and free of fear. You deserve it. We married at the stadium on the 50-yard line after Rex's Saturday practice in a whirlwind ceremony. Rex's agent arranged it with the owners and the coaches, and the team photographer snapped pictures of the ceremony. Rex wore the home uniform as promised, and I wore my white dress, a gorgeous strapless ball gown with a gathered bell skirt and silk taffeta and a fitted bodice. Surprisingly, Rex's agent hadn't thought about procuring a bouquet, and there were no rings. I didn't particularly care about the rings, but it did seem strange not to swap something during the ceremony. Declan and I had married at the Justice of the Peace. No one was present but us and the other waiting couples. In retrospect, my wedding to Declan hadn't felt like a celebration so much as something to tick off a checklist. But there had been rings. Today, though, I had no bouquet. Ryan Johnson, yes, the quarterback for the Squalls, handed me a football to hold instead, as a joke. I thought it was an awesome idea, so I did. This seemed to buy me instant credibility with the rest of the team. At the end of the ceremony, after we recited our run-of-the-mill marriage vows in front of the stadium chaplain, the entire football team, the coaching staff, admin staff, and a few random stadium stragglers, Rex gave me a quick kiss. A speedy and abrupt press of the lips, before I had a single second to anticipate it. He then pressed his forehead to mine, his small, pretend happy smile encouraging my insides to play Twister. Everyone cheered. And you know what? No rings, no bouquet, surrounded by strangers other than Rex. I felt celebrated. I felt cherished. It was, by far, the strangest experience of my life, but also one of the most memorable. My smiles and laughter were real, and I felt oddly joyful. I knew it was fake. I knew all the arrangements, from having the team present to the dress that had been chosen for me, had been for the benefit of the media, lending our unconventional nuptials believability. but I loved every second of it. The adventure, the unknown, even the unexpected in disorder. And I especially loved throwing the football 30 yards like a badass and into the hands of running back legend Trent Compher. Everyone cheered again. Congratulations and good wishes were handed out liberally. The photographer must have taken over 1,000 pictures. And when it was all over, Rex left to change while I wandered around the football field, grinning as I contemplated my strange life. Or rather, grinning as I contemplated how strange my life had become. As I reflected on where I was, both geographically as well as where my life choices had taken me, I decided that my life had been missing something for the last decade, maybe even longer. Maybe my life had been missing something since the very beginning. I'd needed this. I'd needed a little excitement, a change in routine, an event to shake me awake from my sleepy existence. Reluctantly, I admitted to myself that a smidge of upheaval every now and again wasn't the worst thing in the world.
Ready?
I turned and found Rex standing 3 yards away. He now wore a finely cut dark gray suit, a light silver shirt, and an ice blue tie. His short hair was still wet from his shower. He'd shaved, and one of his inscrutable stares was pointed right at me. Even though it was just us, I grinned and said, "I am ready to depart, husband." Something flared behind his eyes, the suggestion of a smile tugging at his mouth.
"You're going to call me husband from now on, aren't you?"
"I am, husband." His smile, though exceptionally small, broke free.
"Does that mean I can call you wife?"
I sauntered over to him, tapping my chin, and said, "I think I actually prefer babe." Now that I knew we weren't flirting, and we never would be flirting, ease and comfort had replaced confusion and hope. Perhaps, before we went our separate ways, I'd start to think of Rex like a brother, similar to how I viewed Walker. Still giving me his little smile, his eyes narrowed at my approach.
"What? Like the pig?"
"Exactly like the pig." I snorted twice, punctuating the sound by poking him in the chest. He glanced down at my hand, but made no move to remove my fingers. "Wait, wasn't the dog's name in that movie Rex?" His smile widened, but he refused to flash any teeth. I always loved it when the farmer said, "That'll do, pig." Like, I don't know, everyone wants to be told they're doing a good job by someone they admire and respect, you know? It's a universal theme, I think. Such a wholesome, wonderful movie.
"And that's why you like Babe? Because it's wholesome?"
Rex reached for my hand and wove it under his arm, pressing my fingers to the crook of his elbow as he turned us toward the exit. No, I laughed. "I like it when you call me babe because you make it sound like the opposite of wholesome." Rex's steps slowed.
"Oh?"
"Yep, you make all this pretending fun, Rex." I used a weird voice and an affected accent to keep the mood light. "And if I have to be fake married to anyone, I'm glad it's you." His smile waned just a little and he deadpanned,
"Because I'm so cuddly and approachable."
Without skipping a beat, I nodded. "I'm fairly certain, judging by that hug last night, you are a championship cuddler, husband."
"Is this your way of hinting that you want to add cuddling to the agreement? Because if so, just say the word, babe."
I busted out laughing, withdrawing my hand so I could shove him away playfully. He was so solid, he didn't move an inch, but he did laugh, his teeth finally making an appearance. Rex caught my hand and brought it back to his elbow, trapping it there.
"So, what do you want to do?"
he asked, sounding happy. Since there was no one else around, I let myself believe his happiness was real.
"I have a game tomorrow, but how about dinner?"
My plane leaves at 9:30 tonight. I should be getting to the airport. I sent Rex, my boss, an apologetic smile. Maybe next time? Once again, his steps slowed, and this time the smile fully vacated his features.
Wait, no. I told Bernadette to fly you out tomorrow, after the game.
Yeah, but I asked her to change it last night after the charity thing, so I can get back and have a full day at the studio tomorrow. Rex's expression seemed to darken, his jaw set, his eyes cutting away. I studied him, not understanding his reaction. I'm sorry. We didn't have anything tomorrow on the schedule. I didn't think you'd care. He shook his head, his eyebrows pulling together, though he did not look at me.
You're right, it's fine.
I squeezed his arm. Rain check, okay?
Sure.
Rex nodded, looking distracted, his eyes on the astroturf.
When am I seeing you again?
The Richmond game. At the reminder, the smile vacated my features as well. Thanksgiving. If I see you after the game, that is. He glanced at me.
You sound nervous.
I am, a little.
Why?
I shrugged, feeling shy about telling the truth. But then I remembered that Rex was my boss and he needed to know if I was struggling with a work assignment. I'm a little worried I won't fit in.
You will. Just do whatever the other wives do.
Okay.
You still look nervous.
I am. I ducked my head. He brought us to a stop, waiting until I met his searching eyes before saying softly,
Don't be. Be yourself. If they don't love you, they're idiots.
That was nice of him to say. So, will I see you? I asked. After the game?
Yeah. All the wives go down to the locker room after. It's tradition. Then they leave, then we all meet up again, and the whole team has Thanksgiving together.
He gave me a barely there smile.
I've seen you eat. You'll do great.
Ha ha. I rolled my eyes, but I took a measure of comfort in his reassurance. Then should I bring my knitting? He tugged me forward again toward the exit.
Sure. I believe one or two of them knit. I couldn't tell you who, though.
Now I pulled him to a stop and captured his eyes to make sure he wasn't teasing. Wait, they knit? He nodded. I exhaled my relief, feeling immeasurably better. Now that completely changed everything.
Chapter 15. The world is full of magic things, patiently waiting for our senses to grow sharper. W.B. Yeats. Hello?
Abby, hey.
I grinned. Who dis?
It's Rex.
Rex who? A pause, then.
Babe.
Oh, I chuckled, a shiver running down my spine. I seriously loved how he, my boss, said babe. In the days since I'd returned from Chicago, he'd been calling just as much as texting, checking in throughout the day and sending me babe pig-in-the-city memes. Hello, husband. How are you?
Good.
He sounded good. If I had to guess, he wore a smile.
Did you see the paper?
That brought me up short. Paper?
The Austin Sentinel?
Oh. I jumped up from my stool, rushing over to my backpack. I'd left for the studio so early this morning I shoved the paper in my bag without reading it. Wait, I thought the article was going to be published next Tuesday.
No, today. I wanted it done before there was a leak.
Rex sure was efficient. Apparently, today, the Tuesday after the wedding and not next Tuesday, as I'd thought, was the day Rex's interview and our wedding photos would appear. Rex had specifically asked to run it in the middle of the week. I haven't seen it yet. I unzipped my backpack and pulled the plastic-wrapped newspaper out. Was the reporter nice? What did they say?
He was nice.
Rex's voice contained just a hint of a menacing edge.
If he hadn't been, I wouldn't have done the interview. It's in the sports section, like we wanted.
The paper had wanted to put Rex's interview on the front page, but Rex and I both agreed the article was a necessary evil. A low-key way to share the news of our wedding and broach the subject of my sordid past so we could control the story. Freeing the newspaper from the sleeve, I flipped to the sports section and reared back. Hey, that's us. I hadn't seen the wedding photos from our awesome ceremony in the stadium last weekend. Rex hadn't sent me any, and I felt weird asking for them. The main picture for the article was a candid shot taken just after Rex's blink-and-you-would-miss-it kiss. Our foreheads were pressed together, and we were both smiling. "Oh, look how cute we are, boss," I said, spreading the paper out on the wedging table.
"Read the article when you have the time, but I think you'll be pleased."
I scanned the text quickly and spotted the softball editorial style right away. Local boy football hero returns to small town Texas and sweeps local girl slash lost love off her feet after she endures heartache and tragedy, blah, blah, blah. You rescued me? I smirked at the first sentence of the fifth paragraph.
Those are his words, not mine.
I chuckled, opening the paper to where the article continued, speed reading until I got to a surprising quote. I blinked at it, read it again just to make sure I had it right, then cleared my throat to recite the quote. McMurtry admits that his wife Abigail was the one that got away, and that he's always hoped he'd find a way to get back to her. Admitted that finally, did you? I teased. I knew it was all fake, just like we were fake, but it still made a squiggle of warmth dance in my tummy.
I didn't say that,
he grumbled.
He paraphrased.
Then what did you say?
I don't remember.
How convenient. He grumbled